Over the past 2 years, Cedar has been able to build a vibrant alumni community, spearheaded by our alumni director, Megan White. On this episode of Through the Trees, we sit down with Megan to learn about the process of growing a recovery community. We are also joined by an alumni who has maintained an active presence in this community, Lisa Peretti. We explore what makes this program flourish, now with a membership of over 1,700 individuals.
Addiction treatment healthcare is vast territory, much of it having yet to be fully charted. It also is a field with some of the most passionate and interesting of clinicians. Each week, we walk the addiction treatment trails, learning from experts of all backgrounds and specialties. My name is Pat Failing, and I'm an addiction psychiatrist for Cedar in the University of Colorado. You're listening to Through the Trees, the Cedar Addiction Treatment Podcast.
So this is Dr. Pat Failing, and I'm really happy to sit down at Cedar today. We're hosting the Through the Trees podcast, and we're talking about the Cedar Alumni Support System and sitting down with Megan White, who is the coordinator of our whole alumni network and everything that it offers. We're also sitting down with a former patient of ours who has been kind of a flag bearer for stable recovery, Lisa Peretti. Thank you so much to sit down with us on our show, guys.
Certainly. I'm so excited to be here. And Lisa, thank you for being part of this as well.
Thank you both for having me. I'm very honored to be here. You both have a little special place in my heart.
So today we're talking a little bit about the role of alumni support and how people can keep good bonds and feel like they're part of a community post-treatment. Megan, tell us a little bit of your development of this program. I know that we get such wonderful accolades of this program. Tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, since the inception of Cedar, you know, back in 2005, we have had alumni services. You know, Lori Obenauer was really the trailblazer of the alumni program here at Cedar. And before I entered the role, it was really quite dormant for a couple of years. You know, alumni services had gone through many different hands. And so when I stepped into the role, I understood that I wasn't necessarily having to reinvent the wheel. Yet I wanted to really talk with our alumni community and understand, you know, what was important to them, you know, and what was relevant moving forward and how we were going to, you know, achieve that. And so what made sense to me was really first, like I said, talking with them. And so I held an open forum and we invited our alumni to come back. And really what that turned out to be was just a large brainstorming session. You know, where what have we done in the past? Where do we want to go? And how are we going to get there? And from that forum, so to speak, we were beginning to lay the foundational pieces of the alumni program. And so we've been steadily building since that point on. And, you know, collaboration is one of the key elements of the alumni program. It is one of our core values, along with connection and community. And so those three core values are really going to be interwoven into everything that we do as part of our program. And so for me, it's very important to continue to collaborate with our alumni who represent all different phases. So from those who are just freshly discharging, you know, to Lisa, who is at about 2 years, to those who have 5, 6, 7 or more years, you know, understanding that each one of those populations is going to want and need something different out of a program.
Sure. Can you give us some of the examples of services that are offered?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, at Cedar, we really serve a broad spectrum of people. You know, we're working with students, we're working with stay-at-home moms and dads, we're working with professionals, those in the working communities, retirees and senior citizens. So that's a pretty broad spectrum of people. So again, every one of those populations is going to want and need something differently out of an alumni program. So when I first set into this role, I understood that. And what I envisioned was having a very robust and diverse platform for people to engage at different levels. And so what that currently looks like is that we have sober social activities for people to get involved with. We have service engagements that people can become involved with. And then we also have ongoing recovery development events that people can access. And so the idea behind that is that people can choose their level of involvement. So what I always tell our alumni is if you're wanting and needing, ongoing connection and ongoing, engagement, then you're able to connect, weekly during our alumni meetings. You can come back and you can share your story on different speaker panels and share your experience with our current patients. You can participate in different monthly events, or you can just come back for, our larger scale annual events. So it's really up to the alumni and what works best with them and their schedule and what they envision for their recovery plan.
So it sounds like you are offering a wide array of events, I guess, that people can attend and can connect, and they can see familiar faces, and they have kind of this common thread of an experience through CEDAR.
Oh, certainly. Absolutely. And, one thing that I did want to touch on is just this concept of connection. And so connection, as I mentioned earlier, is one of the core values of our program. In fact, it really is the bedrock of our program. For me, I can't talk about connection without first talking about community. So what I do in essence is build community. For anyone who has listened to my lecture, I give a monthly lecture to our primary patients here at CEDAR. And so for anyone who has listened on to that, they've likely heard me reference the movie Field of Dreams. And so what's the famous tagline in that movie? Build it and they will come. And working with a population of alcoholics and addicts, I couldn't have found that to be farther from the truth. We want to get involved, we want to participate, and we'll also create 10,000 barriers that prevent us from doing so.
So just because you build it, people will not necessarily
come. Just because you're holding the space doesn't mean that people will feel comfortable or safe to enter that space. So what I have thought to do is create something called Coffee Talk. It's totally Saturday Night Live inspired, if anybody remembers that skit. So what Coffee Talk looks like is it's an opportunity for me to get to know the alumni outside of the scope of addiction, outside of the scope of treatment, but get to know who they are as people. And likewise, it's an opportunity for them to get to know who I am, so that they feel familiar and they feel comfortable with me. So what that looks like is we meet for a cup of coffee, outside of the realm of treatment, outside of the realm of CEDAR. And so that really allows the alumni to show up as they are, to show up authentically and to show up honestly. And so it's a great opportunity, like I said, for us to get to know one another. Likewise, for me to get to know their goals and what they envision for their recovery. And it's at that point that I can then bring them into the space that we're offering. Because even in just a short period of time, an hour sharing a cup of coffee, we establish safety, we establish trust, and we establish rapport. It's also, like I said, just a really opportune meeting for us to be able to collaborate, for them to be able to share what they want and need out of an alumni program. We're able to share any ideas that they may have. Really, it's my role to implement the ideas of our alumni. As I mentioned to them, they have the most relevant and the most freshest and the most brilliant ideas. Again, it's my role to just engineer those ideas. That just creates this sense of excitement. They get involved and they see, some of the impact that their own ideas have had in the program, and they share that excitement within their own peer circles, encouraging their peers to then get involved. And that is, in essence, how you build community, I believe.
Well, that's wonderful. So it sounds like it starts like a very small circle, maybe just one-on-one, and then you hear them out and talk to them and build a rapport, as you said, and then you seek to expand the circle and then to overlap circles and connect people into something bigger and bigger and bigger. So I love it. That sounds very nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, the community just needed a little water and sunshine is how I like to say it. I would say probably about a year and a half into, the development and the building is really when I started to see those seeds bloom, And it was, I remember it actually very distinctly, and I was sitting in an alumni meeting. And, just the care that our alumni have for one another. I was seeing that play out in front of me, and it was almost like I was just sitting in a garden and just watching this garden come to life and bloom. And that has just been the coolest thing to bear witness to. And just to see the growth happen organically and continuing to, our alumni show up and they continue to shape, and grow the program and the community.
Sure. Connected to our overall themes of our podcast, I love this idea of being I titled this Through the Trees, and I think of this idea of CEDAR, and we've always used a kind of an arbor theme with our environment, but also cultivating a really lush forest of all different styles of trees and plants and everything that all kind of blends together. So it is very much of a botanic theme. I don't know. I really like it. Well, so Lisa, tell us a little bit of some of your story and what some of this has meant to you.
Well, I'd like to start out by saying that this was not my first rodeo. When I came to Cedar, it was actually my third time in rehab. I had been to another facility twice before, without a lot of follow-up, without a plan going out for what I was going to do to continue to stay sober. I like to refer to it as a spin dry. So I got sober, and then I went back out into my life and eventually relapsed twice. So by the time I got to Cedar, I was very devastated and broken, and it was very clear to me that recovery needed to be a lifestyle, not a Band-Aid or an event or a quick fix. I also was, like I said, very devastated. So that gave me the motivation to work really hard and to go all in on my recovery. The first thing that happened was when I was a patient here, the clinicians, Dr. Failing, was one of the people that really helped remove the shame for me. Shame was a huge piece of my relapsing, of my illness, it was just a heavyweight that held me down. So I can recall clearly when he looked at me and said, "You are not a moral failure, you have a disease." And from that point on, I was able to just start giving myself a small bit of compassion. And that compassion's grown a lot since then. But just knowing that, if I was going to stay in shame, I was going to stay sick. So I wanted to say that I felt very safe by the clinicians. And that's where it began. And then that allowed me the space to be honest and genuine about where I was with my peers that I was in rehab with. And because I had been in before, I knew that it was very important to be honest and to talk about what was going on. So as I connected with my peers, I built solid relationships with them. And when I left rehab, started a book club, came to alumni meetings, mostly because I was excited to pick up my milestone chips because I'd worked very hard for them, or so it felt. I was asked to come back and speak on panels, spirituality panels, tell my story. And I think that was a win-win. It was very healing for me to tell my story. And it was also helpful for the patients to hear someone's experience going out of treatment and into the world. So yeah, I really think that Cedar was very great at educating me that I needed to leave here with support and a plan. And I felt like the alumni services were very intentional about keeping people connected to recovery coaching, to alumni meetings, to opportunities for service.
I'm curious a little bit about the book club. What? Tell us a little bit more about this. Was this blended into your path of recovery?
So the book club was a lot of fun. I basically... Megan and I would giggle because we ended up calling it the non-book club book club. So no one could ever decide on a book, and no one ever got organized enough to get the book. I think we started with one book, and then it kind of trickled down. Anyway, the book club happened for about a year. I had women only in my house, alumni from Cedar. We ate, we talked, we laughed, and that was so necessary for me because I had a lot of people that were angry at me. There was a lot of devastation in relationships. And so once again, this facet of community and connection was so important to me, to have a safe place, to have friends and laugh and not feel like people were angry at me. We were all in the same boat. We bonded over this malady that we were all suffering with. And it felt like almost the first time in my life that I could really, really let people see who I was and be genuine. And that was such a gift for me in my 40s to be myself and to give myself that room and grace. And I think that came with age and sobriety and just being in rehab at Christmas with people without family. So the book club went for about a year and it fizzled out. We just decided to kind of let it go. And some of us still get together, but the few of us that are still sober come back for alumni meetings and keep in touch as we can.
Sure. That's like a wonderful example of a corrective experience. I think of so many people are going to their book club and half of it is about the bottles of wine. And so this is being able to, it's like being able to live and to be able to socialize and have fun that also is in line with a path of recovery. There's some similarities in our last podcast where we sat down with Duke Rumley and talked about sporting events, concerts, tailgating, being able to experience the greater Denver, Colorado area with a lot of fun and be sober. And once again, that's another example of correction or a corrective experience.
Experience the compassionate care of CEDAR, the Center for Dependency, Addiction, and Rehabilitation. Located at the University of Colorado Hospital, we manage complex health needs in addition to addiction. To learn more, visit cedarcolorado.org.
Well, very good. I know one phrase that is talked about in our community is the opposite of addiction is connection. And I think it speaks to how the human element and the bonds with other people seems to be a necessary ingredient for people really to recover. What are you guys' thoughts on this? How does this apply to what we're talking about?
I think connection is a huge piece of recovery. And I'd like to start by first saying, as I've become clearer and further along in my recovery, I think that the most important thing for me was to become reconnected with myself. You know, I think a huge part of addiction is, wanting to run from self, from pain, from hurts that happen to us in life. And so for me, this round of recovery, leaving CEDAR with good clinical help, really helped me to connect to myself first and to step more into my higher self as I can. So as I connected with myself, I was able to genuinely start connecting with others. So I completely agree that addiction is very isolating. We isolate from our own selves. And from the core of who we are, we isolate from our families. I know at the end of my addiction, I was drinking alone. I felt very squashed, like I didn't have a voice. Very isolated, but I had a million friends. I had, over 1,000 social media connections. And so I brought up the point about connecting to self first because even with a million people around me, I could still feel isolated and alone. So that has been a huge gift for me to connect to myself and then in turn to step out and connect with other people in a genuine way.
Even though you had a lot of some base connections with people, you still felt highly lonely.
Definitely. Most definitely. And it seemed like the further into addiction I got and the older I got, I became more and more lonely and isolated inside of myself. You know, I was a stay-at-home mom. I was home with kids. As I look back, it definitely seemed very, very lonely.
Is this something we see? Megan, of people you sit down with post-CEDAR, do people score very high on loneliness?
Oh, yeah, certainly. You know, and I think even in my own, recovery experience, I'm beginning to see addiction not so much as addiction and recovery not so much as recovery. I think each of those terms carry such heavy connotation with them and societal expectation and personal expectation. And so I've really sought to just boil those two words down. And I'm starting to see addiction more so as isolation and recovery more so simply as connection. And, I can speak for myself and certainly many of the alumni that I work with. And there certainly is, a common theme of just this isolation. And it's not necessarily physical isolation, though some of us have experienced that. But I think to Lisa's point is that you can be surrounded by your family. You can be surrounded by your friends, whether that's on social media or in person. You can be surrounded by the folks in your neighborhood, yet still feel so disconnected. And so I think what we're experiencing more so than the physical isolation is the spiritual isolation and is the emotional isolation. And so I think that's why it's so incredibly vital, you know, when intentionally creating community to create a space that is safe and a space that is inclusive and a space that is nurturing so that people feel comfortable to not only step in the space, but be an active person within the space, you know, so actively sharing pieces of their own story, actively listening. And I think that's really how recovery begins to manifest. You know, it's very peer driven in that way.
Are there a fair amount of the alumni services that are hosted here on the 9 acres of Cedar, or are they all across Denver? Or?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say that our premier sort of alumni event, if you could call it that, is our weekly alumni meeting, which is, again, something that we've had, you know, for many, many years since Cedar has been around. You know, I would definitely say as of the past year and a half, there's been a resurgence. And so we're starting to see higher and higher numbers of alumni continuing to come back week in and week out, you know. And so I would say that definitely is our premier sort of event. And what I like to call it is it's a place to return to, you know. So for many, Cedar was that starting place where, you know, we began to peel back those layers and we began to heal and we began to recover and we began to say, you know, it's okay that I feel this shame and it's okay that I feel this guilt and here's how I'm going to work through it. And so I think, you know, again, Cedar is just a place to return to, and the alumni meeting allows our alumni to come back into that safe place and to show our current residents how they recovered, you know. So it becomes this reciprocity, you know, this momentum of just receiving and giving and giving and receiving. And that's a beautiful thing to be able to, again, bear witness to.
And Cedar has been in operation as a hospital center, I believe, for, 12, 13 years?
Yeah.
Do you have anybody as far back as that who's been alumni for the last decade? Or?
Yeah, actually, surprisingly, yeah. When I first stepped into this role, you know, it could be a really daunting task, you know, being charged with having to build a community for an organization that's been around for 13 plus years, you know. And so it's almost like your first natural instinct is to reach back to alumni number one. And I was given some very poignant advice, and it was specifically to do the opposite. Don't reach back to alumni number one. Work with your current patient groups who you have here already, and also with the alumni who are coming back to the meetings and to other events that we have here just naturally and of their own accord. Work with those folks, start to build something special, and eventually word will get out to our alumni who have, you know, multiple years that there has been, you know, a resurgence within the alumni community, and I'll be damned if that hasn't happened, you know. So what I am seeing, you know, is our alumni, active alumni, is those who have just recently discharged up to about 2 years. And at that point, we kind of see attendance and participation taper off a little bit. And so what I'd really like to focus on moving into this new year is how can we get our folks, you know, who have 5, 6, 7 years re-engaged in the alumni community. And one way I've thought to do that is to host, I think to start, maybe a monthly meeting specifically designed for our alumni who have 2 or more years. Because at that point, you know, the focus of recovery becomes a little bit different. The challenges of recovery become a little bit different. And so I think the conversation needs to be different for those folks. But to answer your question, yeah, we do. Just recently, we had a gentleman who was really, I think, in the first class of Cedar patients here about 14 years ago. He just picked up his 14-year chip. And so that's pretty neat to be able to see, you know, alumni from varying stages come back, participate, engage in varying ways as well.
Sure. Well, that's wonderful. I guess to your point, I know, so Lisa, you were here 2 years ago. Do you feel like you're working on different things these days than what you were working on a couple years ago?
Most definitely. And Megan, I love that idea. I choose to supplement my recovery with 12-step recovery. And I have noticed, even with my meeting, I have a home group that meets 2 nights a week. And if there are new people, we focus on steps 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. So over and over again, we talk about steps 1, 2, and 3. And that can be great to give hope to newcomers, to be of service. But I found myself in a place where I was getting very almost resentful and irritable about hearing the same conversation over and over again. So thankfully, I decided to check out some other meetings, and I did find some that, you know, there are meetings for people that are further along. They're called emotional sobriety or, you know, I think it would be very helpful because, yes, definitely deal with certain things. I don't necessarily my thinking isn't quite as myopic. My world's bigger. I have stresses with family and kids now, where in the beginning it was more like, how am I going to stay sober? How am I going to connect with people? How am I going to build new relationships? My life is very full and colorful today, but now it's more managing stress and keeping myself grounded. And it's definitely a lot different.
Does the alumni support ever serve to help people who are kind of going backwards, to kind of reconnect them into healthcare, get them back into treatment if they're not doing well?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that really speaks to the importance of engaging in alumni services post-treatment, because it allows, obviously it allows the alumni to stay close, right, to CEDAR and to the multi-levels of care that we have available here. And again, I think it just goes back to creating that intentional community that is inclusive. And so understanding not everybody is going to be on the same pathway in recovery, nor should everybody be in the same pathway to recovery. You know, everybody is on their own unique path. And really, you know, I want to stress to, you know, our current residents and our alumni that I support you on that unique path, even if that path looks like it's going backwards. And so I do monthly outreach with our alumni, and I really encourage them, you know, to engage in communication with me. Let me know, you know, how they're doing and what kind of challenges they may be facing. Likewise, what successes they may be experiencing. But I encourage them to honestly report, you know, even if that honest report looks like they're actively using, they experienced a relapse or a lapse of some sort. Because when they honestly report, that really just allows me to better be able to support them, get them plugged into resources, whether that's back at CEDAR or in their, you know, own specific community, wherever they may live. So it's huge, definitely.
Do you have any broad numbers? How many people are in the whole pool of the alumni community through CEDAR?
Oh, man, that's tough. So one of the current databases that I have, we have about probably close to 1,800 contacts. Now, I'm sure that we have more alumni who have come through CEDAR's doors in the, you know, 14 years that we've been opened. But, you know, there's certain things that go into that, whether or not they've signed a consent and whether or not they may have moved and their contact information may have changed. But we do work with about, I would say, 1,700 to 1,800 contacts.
Okay, that's so wonderful. So that's
it's not to say that everybody's active, you know, but it's not to say that everybody's active. But I, you know, like I said, I'm continually just am impressed and amazed with the growing numbers that our alumni meeting is seeing. And definitely in some of our alumni events as well. You know, I think that that's slow to develop. We're trying to see, you know, what works and what events work and what people, you know, will show up to and what areas of town people will show up to those events at. But we're just continually seeing what works. And so far, I think what works is having events here at CEDAR, because, again, it's that safe place to return to for many folks.
Sure. Lisa, are you more on the intensely active side of the alumni, or more medium, or?
I would say probably the first year to 18 months I was intensely active, and I would at this point say I'm medium, just because my life, like I said, my life is very busy and full. I love coming back to the alumni meetings. I think it's very synchronistic for the patients to see someone who has achieved a little time in sobriety, and I think it's very beneficial for me to sit in that room and be reminded where I was and how far I've come. So I think it's a give and take, and I stay active on, I was going to bring up the Facebook page is great. I've connected with a lot of women on that. I also come back occasionally to the women's meeting on Saturday mornings. It's a great place if I'm needing a new sponsee to help keep me fresh, to pick up sponsees. Most of my sponsees that I've sponsored have come from CEDAR. So that's been very good for me as well, because that is a huge part of my recovery in helping me grow. I learned so much more from sponsoring women than I do probably from any other thing in my recovery. So that's been a big gift as well. Whenever I'm asked, my sponsors said, when you're asked, say yes if you can. So I come back and speak, and it still continues to help me heal and to just kind of put some salve on that wound that was infected and gaping and continues to heal a little better. So I love coming back here. It's has a very special place in my heart. So I come back when I can.
So it sounds like it has some flexibility in terms of how people want to use it.
Certainly, you know, and, you know, Lisa and definitely her group of alumni are very special to me because they were the folks that I was first working with when I stepped into the role 2 years ago. And so I still, you know, to this day, 2 years later, maintain, you know, very close connections with Lisa and others who are right around that 2 year mark. But I certainly understand, you know, that life does look different and recovery does look different, you know, 18 months, 2 years out. And so that's the whole point of recovery is we want to get our folks back into their life, you know, back with their families, back with their careers, back with themselves and just enjoying, you know, who they're discovering themselves to be, you know. And so that is the point of recovery is to get our folks back into life. And whenever we can get them involved in whatever platform that looks like, I'll surely get them involved. You know, I see Lisa probably on a monthly basis and you know, her platforms of engagement look differently today. You know, for example, sitting with you today on this podcast, just recently she shared her story, not for our residents, but for our staff. And I think that that was incredibly impactful and powerful for our staff to be able to listen to, you know, everything that she's gone through in her 2 years of recovery, you know, what she's learned and how she's applied the skills and the tools that she you know, acquired here at Cedar, how she's applying those, you know, in her life. So I think that's huge. And again, and just wanting to work with our alumni and understanding, you know, what would be important for them to get involved with.
Sure. Megan, do you feel like there were any things that you tried that for some reason just didn't really work out? Like ideas and planning?
Yeah, certainly. You know, and I think that's so incredibly important to understand that the program that we built, the community we built, is fluid, right? And so it's going to change and it's going to evolve over time. And, you know, some of the ideas that I may have had 2 years ago that I thought were going to be an absolute hit turned out to kind of fizzle, you know, and for whatever, yeah, and for whatever reason, you know, maybe we just didn't have the right group of folks at that time. Maybe the community just wasn't ready at that time. You know, I, again, received some very good advice coming into this role, and this person told me everything on its own time. And I've really begun to understand, you know, the profundity of that simplistic statement and everything on its own time and understanding that you're gonna plant seeds and they might not grow until a year, 2 years, sometimes even 3 years out, simply because you just don't have the infrastructure. Again, you don't have the right people. The timing is not right. And so I have a lot of, you know, ideas in my treasure chest, so to speak. But I'm patient with those ideas, you know, and I don't want to introduce one of those ideas when I know the timing is not right. And so I want to be patient with those ideas, intentional with those ideas, and really just let it manifest on its own time, you know.
Sure. So you are a true cultivator. We have seeds of...
I like to think so, which is funny because I'm not a green thumb by any measure. I keep saying every single spring I'm going to start a garden and I just don't have one, but maybe I just need to accept that the alumni community is my garden. So there's that.
Yeah. Well, I love it. I mean, over the upcoming year, can you give us some hints and some things that you think might be rolled out?
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, this coming Thursday, I guess that's tomorrow already, we just recently introduced something called After Hours at our alumni meeting. And so what that looks like is it's a business meeting for our alumni meeting. So we meet once a month after the alumni meeting, and I just encourage people who want to get involved either with the meeting or with alumni services as a whole to come and to offer their feedback and their ideas and their suggestions. And so tomorrow at the After Hours meeting, we're actually going to be discussing sort of a vision for 2020 and what's on our wish list. And so one thing that's at the top of my wish list is to start this monthly alumni meeting for those who have 2 or more years of sobriety. So definitely want to do that. I would also really like to see us put together an alumni newsletter. So crafted by alumni for alumni. So speaking to different areas of what it means to recover. So physical recovery, financial recovery, spiritual recovery, all of that. And then, you know, probably just be doing some more sober social events. So that is one thing that our alumni voice quite frequently is that they want more opportunities to get together and to just have fun and to just bond and just connect outside of the context of a meeting or outside of the context of a peer support group, but just getting to know one another and forming friendships. So those are probably three things that are at the top of my list right now.
I think that this was very useful to understand on everything that's going on with Cedar and the alumni community. It sounds like it's quite large. It sounds like it has a fluid concept. And it sounds like it's really trying to meet people at different stages of their journey, which is, and Lisa, you've been very helpful in sharing some of this and how this has been really meaningful to you. Do you guys have any final thoughts or things you'd like to tell our listeners?
Yes, I guess I would just like to reiterate again how important I think connection is. And I'd also like to share about how being connected to alumni services has really been an extra layer of support for me. I think when we get sober, or we're trying to get sober, or we're thinking about getting sober, the more people we can connect with who understand addiction, who can relate with us where we're at on our journey, it's just so important to reach out and to be with others who have been in the same boat. So yeah, I would just highly encourage you to find a way to connect with other people who want to be well, just like you.
Yeah, help people in recovery feeling good about themselves, feeling morale, self-esteem, re-engaged, forward-thinking, everything.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So I would just like to, reiterate, just the importance of connecting to a community. So every alumni meeting, I welcome those whose first meeting it is by saying, I want to welcome you to this meeting, and I want to welcome you to our community. You have a place here. And I so badly wanted to hear that in my early days of sobriety. You belong here. You have a place here. Pull up a seat. So I think just knowing that there is a space for our alumni to enter into where they won't be judged and they're free to be themselves and to give them a chance to recover is huge.
Sure. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. So this is Dr. Pat Phelan. This is our Through the Trees podcast here at CEDAR. And we have a lot of pride in our alumni network and everything that we've been able to extend for people. We sat down today with Megan White, who is the director of our alumni program, and also Lisa Peretti, who has been an active participant in the CEDAR community for the last couple of years. And I think it really makes a big difference in people's lives. So it's quite wonderful. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Through the Trees, the CEDAR Addiction Treatment Podcast. Please visit cedarcolorado.org for a wide array of educational content about the disease of addiction and the science of recovery. If you or a loved one are considering CEDAR and the University of Colorado Hospital for treatment, please speak with our admissions team at 720-848-3000. CEDAR, the Center for Dependency, Addiction, and Rehabilitation, helping people build a life of recovery.